Hey, gang, are you in a band in Austin? You're looking to make the leap from the band of schmoes to the band of pros? Well, you can start by rehearsing at Space. Space is a state-of-the-art affordable venue for rehearsal and recording located just a few short miles south of downtown Austin. 31 spacious rooms, great PAs, and a very helpful and courteous staff. That's Space Rehearsal and Recording. Find them at 512-448-9518 or go to spaceatx.com and take the talent train from Schmoesville to Protown with Space Rehearsal and Recording. Let's get down. Hey gang, do you find yourself listening to your music on one app and then listening to your podcast on another app? If you do, stop this insane behavior right now and download Spotify. Spotify is home to all of your favorite music and all of your favorite podcasts. Podcasts including Fly on the Wall, the Saturday Night Live podcast with Dana Carvey and David Spade, the Rock on Tours podcast with Gary Kemp and Guy Pratt, old favorites like Fresh Air, My Favorite Murder, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Look, if you're looking for a news podcast or sports or entertainment or true crime, look, if you're looking for a sewing podcast or an RV podcast, Spotify has all of this for you. That's Spotify, all of your favorite music and all of your favorite podcasts in one place. Find it in your app store and start listening today. That's Spotify, music and podcasts. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time. How did I get here? And now here is your host, Tommy Naughty.
When we talked,
all right. Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys all had a good week so far, whatever it is you did this week. I've had a good week. Boy, that I told you guys on Tuesday's show that I was hosting the Ham and Austin Music Foundation collaboration show for Ham Day on Tuesday. Ham Day was crazy, man. It was crazy. There was so much music. You forget how much music is out there, like being played that day from 7 in the morning until 2 in the morning. Everywhere. Apparently, they had music from like 7 in the morning until like midnight at the Waterloo Amphitheater, at the new Waterloo Park over there. They had, it turns out Iron Maiden was playing, they weren't doing it for Ham Day, but they were playing at the Moody Center. I really wish I would have been able to go see that because, I don't think I'll... Will I get to see them? You think they'll be back again? I don't know. Anyway, back to the Ham Day celebration. It was great. I hosted that Austin Music Foundation Ham show at the Mohawk. It was great. Jane Leo played. Kid Jones played. Anastasia Hera and the Heroes played. And El Combo Oscuro. All of those people have been in our artist development program over the last 6 years. El Combo Oscuro is in the current program. You can find out more about it by going to the austinmusicfoundation.org. And also, hey, if you live in Austin or you just moved to Austin or something, you're involved in the music business or you're involved in the music scene or you're trying to get into the music scene here and you're having a difficult time, go to austinmusicfoundation.org. They offer free consultations. And it's great. Just go to awesomemusicfoundation.org, get involved. If you still want to donate to Ham, you still can. You don't just have to do it on Ham Day. You can do it on any day. Myham.org. Go there. All right. There's all the organizations going on. I am gang. I'm going to Houston this weekend. My cousin Megan is coming in from New York with her son Max. I'm going to hang out. Got no gigs for a couple weeks. So I'm kind of freestyling. Going to visit the family this weekend. I haven't seen my grandma in a few weeks. It's just crazy because I was there. I mean, if you listen to the show, you know I was there from like April until July, basically. And basically, you know, been going back a little less every now and then. I haven't been there in like 3 weeks, I think. It's been a bit, but I'm looking forward to seeing my grandma, my aunts, my cousin Megan, who I haven't seen in a few months, my cousin Max, who's so lovely and beautiful, little two-year-old boy. He's so awesome, man. He talks and does all kinds of... I've got all kinds of kid stuff going on, gang. Next week, I'm going to Miami because my brother had a child a couple weeks ago. I've got a brand new nephew. Jack Kelly lives in Miami. I know. I'm going to Miami. Those of you that keep score, that listen to the show, it's Miami is like my dad's side of the family is in a constant state of war. These guys are at war all the time. Now kids aren't talking to my dad. And, my dad's insane. You might have heard a couple weeks ago, I told you he started getting involved in all my life business just because I asked him a question. And all of a sudden, he's like, I told this guy in Dallas, I put him on your podcast. Like, are you fucking crazy, dude? So anyway, there's all this insanity happening there. And the funny, you know, the funniest thing about it, I haven't been there in 4 years, okay? I haven't been to visit my family there in 4 years. I haven't seen my brothers and sisters in 4 years. I haven't seen my little nephew, AJ, in almost 4 years. He's a little over four now. I went twice when he was a baby. So I'm going to go see him, go see those brothers and sisters, my stepmom. But I have to visit everyone almost individually. Like, everyone can't go gather at one place anymore because too many people hate too many other people in the family. But the main thing is that then, you know, when I get there, there's a few people in my family that kind of, like, the only thing they really say to me the whole time I'm there is like, well, how long has it been here? Been 4 years? God, it's been 4 years since you've been here. Have you been here in 4 years? Oh, my God, when was the last time you were here? 4 years? Oh, God. I mean, you haven't been here in 4 years, just constantly. And then they're like, God, why didn't you come more often? You're like, man, if you came to where you guys lived from somewhere else, it would blow your fucking mind. And you'd haul ass back. I'm staying for like 4 days, and it's almost like 4 days too much. I'm getting in. It is. I'm going for 4 days, and it's almost 4 days too much. I love those people. I do. I love my family, but they are insane, and it's difficult to be around everyone at once. And it's very, everyone doesn't like everyone. And so there's a constant, like, every time you're with someone, they're talking about the last person you were with, and like, hey, you can come over tomorrow, but don't bring that what's his name. You're like, God damn it, man. What am I supposed to do here? Whew. Oh, thanks for listening, because that was completely insane. Listen, it's true. My family's insane. Florida's insane. Miami's insane. But I'm doing it. I'm jumping in. I'm going to see family this weekend. That's a mellow family. Everybody loves each other. We'll go to Miami and deal with the warring factions. You'll hear all about it when I come back in a couple weeks. All right? So exciting. Gang, I have a great show for you today. You know, Violet Lee from Madam Radar, when she was on the show, when they were on the show like a month ago or whatever, she was like, hey, I've got this friend, and he has this record out, and you should interview him, man. He's an interesting cat. His name's Anthony Garcia. So I said, sure, man, introduce us by email, and I'll have him on the show. So she did. She introduced us, and I want to thank Violet for setting this up. I'll give her a co-producer credit on this show, executive producer. Booking a person credit. What am I doing? Anyway, she set me up with this great singer-songwriter named Anthony Garcia, originally from Lubbock. And this is also like something I've been talking about to people that are from West Texas and places like that. Their music feels and sounds like a giant Western expanse. You know what I mean? I talked to Jeremy Nail about that, who's from that same area. This guy, Anthony Garcia, very, very Western music. Great, great. He's got a fantastic record out called Acres of Diamonds. Came out in 2020. He's got a single out called Devil in My Heart. I think we're going to play that on here. I don't know exactly, but I think we're going to play that song on here. Anyway, he's a classically trained pianist, learned Spanish guitar, and has really worked his ass off like in music and trying to sort of like get to a place where he can express this really amazing, like, he's an amazing guitar player, and he does all this stuff on acoustic guitar that's just fucking awesome, man. He's a shredder, and he's a great songwriter, and this record's great. You can see them playing live, him and his band, Anthony Garcia, playing live Saturday, November 5th at the Ridgely Theater Lounge in Fort Worth, Texas. Go to Anthony Garcia Music for all of your Anthony Garcia needs. I really had a great time talking to this dude. I want to thank Violet Lee once again for setting this up. Really fantastic getting to talk to this. He sent me an email the other day saying that he was on his way back from Europe. I think he might have been playing there. Maybe he was playing in Europe. I don't know. Go to AnthonyGarciaMusic.com. Get involved with that. You can follow him on the socials. Great dude. Great conversation. Fantastic artist. If you don't know about him, listen to him, man. He's got a great story. He's a fascinating dude. And that's what this show's about. I'm not only getting... You don't only get to know artists you love better, but I get to introduce you to artists in a very intimate way. So this one's in person. This is me and Anthony Garcia talking about life, talking about music, talking about how he does it. Let's get down. Feel bad. I'm like, God, this dude's driving all the way from like wherever you're driving from, Holland, outside of Temple. And then he's going to get here, and it's like some dude's apartment. And you're like, oh, shit. This, I thought it was like some kind of thing.
No way, man. Don't feel bad. Like I said, I drive everywhere. I even got new vehicles because I'm a badass now. I got a Prius, man.
Oh, yeah? Oh, that's killer, dude.
No, I had an Equinox for a while, and it's a long story, but I was driving it because I didn't choose it. I just kind of had to buy it for certain reasons. So I traded that in. Got a Prius and got a Econoline van that I'm turning into a camper van right now. So it's really awesome. But that one's like 15 miles a gallon and the Prius is like 40 miles a gallon. I never would have envisioned myself driving a Prius at any point in my life, but I love it.
You seem too tall for a Prius. Like seeing you get out of a Prius seems like it would be kind of funny. Like someone would be like, whoa, look at that dude getting out of a Prius.
It is. And it's funny because my wife is like 5'4". And we got her a Silverado that's like a 4x4. It's like huge. So this little girl gets out of this
guy's got
big
trade
truck,
cars,
and I'm like,
man,
get out of the Prius. It's pretty funny.
Do you know who Jeremy Nail is?
I know that
songwriter
name.
Guy.
I've listened to him.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I've listened to him. The answer is yes, and okay. I know I've listened to him. Here and there, because I was curious to about him, and I really liked his stuff. I do remember listening to him.
He's from Albany, Texas, which is out there in the West Texas area. Uh-huh. You guys don't sound alike, but mm-hmm. there's a sound to each of your music. Mm-hmm. I believe in your it's referred to as cinematic, like in your bio, which mm-hmm. I get that too. Because mm-hmm. but to me, it's because it sounds, you can hear the expanse of the space that you're coming from.
Right.
Does that make sense? Like that, when you're in Lubbock and you look around, like you see for fucking miles.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I think that's the beauty of out there. I mean, so I grew up there, you know, from 5 years old till through college and all that. And it wasn't until I left and lived other places and came back to visit that I could truly appreciate the beauty that's out there. Because when you're there, you just want to leave. When you're there, you want to get out of
exactly.
there.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
It's like
yeah.
it's ugly. It's yeah. the ugliest place you can ever imagine.
Yeah.
And when you go back, you're like, I can breathe. I can smell the rain. You know, I can see the sunset, and it's just a certain energy that's out there. And it's beautiful, and I love it. And I think that contributes to a lot. I think that gives the musicians that come from Lubbock, like you said, their original sound, their sound of, I don't know what it is.
You know,
it's a certain kind of sound, you know.
Of the people that come there, Joe Ely really has that too. Like Joe Ely, and Joe Ely have some cross, like the Spanish guitar stuff that happens. And there's a lot of that in the Joe Ely jams. That's what I was wondering. I got to tell you, man, you are a monster guitar player.
Oh, and thank you.
I watched that video and you're doing it on acoustic guitar. I'm like, what is he using? Like nines on his acoustic? Like what the fuck is going on?
I have tens on
here?
There, but I do.
Oh, you do use tens?
Yeah. And I have that Takamine. I use a Takamine. So it feels like an electric. And I use some pedals that make it sound like an electric guitar. But thank you for saying that. That's very nice of you. And,
well, also like that's you just playing guitar on the record, right?
Yes. Yes.
And you're also playing piano?
Yes.
Killer fucking piano player, dude.
Thank you very much.
That's your thing. You're classically trained.
Yes, I went to school. You know, when it was time to come to college, I was like, well, I want to study music, and so I ended up studying for 4 years. And I was an education major.
So you were gonna teach? That was the
yeah. I did teach for about a year, until I realized how much I hated it. But as part
funny
of
that, you go spend 4 years and then you go in the field for 1 year. Yeah. And you're like, no way.
Well, so my deal was when I went to college is that I wanted to study music, not realizing that once you got to university,
right,
that you can only choose band, orchestra, or choir. And I don't play any band or orchestra.
Was that at Texas Tech?
Yeah, it was at Texas Tech. And I don't play any band or orchestral instruments. So I was like, well, I guess I'll do choir. And I sang in choir in high school and stuff like that. And I played piano. So I kind of just gave up guitar for 4 years and devoted myself to the piano. So that's kind of how that happened. Incidentally, you also can choose a performance track, a composition track, or a education track. You have to choose one of those to study, to complete your degree. And I knew I wasn't going to be a performance major because those are the guys that go play with orchestras and go tour, playing classical repertoire. You have to be an Olympic athlete for that, basically.
And well, also, then, like, you don't have a choice in what you play. Like, you're just playing this shit that's 200 years old. Not that it's bad, but it's like you just kind of like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I admire that. I love that world. Sure. I love that world of classical music. I just knew that I'm nothing compared to people that devote their lives to that. I mean, those are people that are just machines.
Right.
And as far as the composition track goes, you would basically, I mean, I didn't really see much of a future as being, I mean, writing the kind of, being a composition major didn't seem like very appealing to me as far as a future goes. So I was like, well, you know what? I might as well choose education because at least I can get, you know, I'll be able to get a job and support myself once I get out of school. And, you know, and I did, and I, you know, went on to teach. I'm glad I did that. I learned a lot, and I learned, speaking of going back to the piano, I'm happy that I did that because the teacher that I had, thank God for her, because she took my technique. She was a piano pedagogy instructor. So she, her thing was,
what that means.
Her thing was basically teaching you how to use your physical body to produce a sound on an instrument. And that's so cool. So essentially when I came to college, I was playing in such a way that in a couple of years, I probably would have developed carpal tunnel and I would have injured myself.
Oh,
and so she basically took my technique and completely changed it.
Right.
And she showed me how to use the weight of my body to play the instrument as opposed to having tension in my hands and trying to strong arm the instrument. And that's a short description of something that took 4 years for me to kind of begin to understand. I'm still trying to understand it. She came from a holistic point of view about teaching me how to teach the piano, you know, as opposed to playing, being a great performer. It was more about teaching how to teach, you know,
That's cool.
And so I'm glad she did that because it changed the way I played.
Rid of some bad habits.
It got rid of all my bad habits. Yeah. My first semester I wasn't even playing repertoire. She just had me putting all my weight on the piano and then she would check to make sure my shoulders were relaxed.
Yeah.
And then I would jump to another part of the keyboard. I mean, I did that for like a semester and she was like, that's what you do. You don't do anything else. And I was like, what is this? I'm sure there's a movie that's like, it was like kind of like Karate Kid, you know?
Yeah. I came to learn karate. I'm not here to wax your car, dude. Yeah. Exactly. Or paint your fence.
It was very wax on, wax off, but she was a very positive teacher. And so thankful to her, very, very thankful to her for that.
Okay. So wait, let's get back to this record. Mm-hmm. Let me get my notes in the right place.
Yeah, man.
Thanks for the actual CD.
Yeah. You're you know,
did you do that artwork?
It's a collector's item, not because it's my album, but because it's a CD, man. You know,
right.
They're in extinction.
I was listening to one when you came in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, but I have a whole situation. Well, I was also listening to like NS10, so I'm like a 1990 person or something.
Yeah. I did the artwork.
Mm-hmm. Acres of Diamonds. This is your first record. This is the only record that's available on places. Did you do other ones that you're not talking about?
Yeah, I've done other ones. Yeah, I've done other ones under different project names. And then I have a little playlist on my artist profile on Spotify that has like compilations of like the songs from other projects, but I'm kind of trying to just whittle myself down to just putting music out under my name now, you know,
what made you come to that decision? Like what? Cause it's hard to wrangle cats and.
Well, let's just see. How can I say this? I was in, I've been in previous groups and, I was in romantic relationships with like in three of them.
Oh, and then, within the group, like Fleetwood Mac style.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there were different incarnations and three different relationships. And I just realized, you know, you can't date the person that you're, I mean, for me personally, I'm not saying you shouldn't, anyone else shouldn't, but it just didn't, it worked out for me in such a way that when you break up or, you know, with someone that you're romantically involved with and musically involved with, it's just doubly hard. And that happened to me three times. And it happened three times. It didn't happen to me I was just like, you know, I want to focus on just my personal.
That's interesting because you have two women in your band.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And, you know, they're great friends and, Megan, my violin player Megan is, she's married and she has her own family. And so she's just, it's wonderful to be playing with a person who, like I said, you're not romantically involved with, but is also just a solid person and very, you know, good, great musician. All my band members are just solid, you know, people who have their lives together, they're just good friends, you know?
You know, it's funny. I've been a fucking, I've been like a music dude since I was a little kid. I don't, I've made out with like two musician women. I just don't like, I have that weird kind of like, I don't know how many of us we can have in this house. Like we need a different kind of person in here.
Yeah.
All right. So where did you make this record?
So this was recorded at, you know where Mosaic Sound Collective
is? Of course
is?
I do.
Okay, so was it at Mosaic Sound Collective?
What an asshole. And, I didn't mean it like, of course I do.
Of course. Look who you're talking to.
Dan Redmond's in my phone.
there's a nonprofit group called transientmic.org, and Jeremy Fowler and David Garcia, not no relation to me, but they are devoted to... recording, you know, they're a mobile recording studio, and they document, you know, they're devoted to documenting local music and Austin musicians. And,
okay.
And so it just so happened that when we met, they had just gotten their nonprofit status, and Jeremy Fowler, who happens to be my bass player as well, this was his first album to produce. So it was sort of their goal is okay. to take artists, produce their albums at no cost to the right. artist. And
wow.
And they get grants and try to, you know, they're hustlers trying to get grants and really just get back Oof. To the community in that way. So,
Jesus, that must be exhausting. Yeah. Man, those poor guys.
They're hard. They work hard and they do it because they love the music, you know, and they love the local community. But they've been doing great. They just got a grant from Sweetwater, a pretty sizable grant. And
really?
They're converting an old school bus now, and they're building
an actual mobile recording.
Studio. They're getting proper equipment. I mean, they're really doing well for themselves now. So
how cool!
But this was in 2020 and 2019 when I was recording the album. So it was sort of like they had just started kind of fixing up their place at Mosaic.
Right.
They have a little studio there, and so recorded drums with Charles Godfrey, he's an engineer. He's engineered several. Albums out in El Paso. He's from El Paso. I can't remember the big studio that's out there, but
in Tornillo, you mean?
I don't know where it would be.
Sonic Ranch.
Yes, that's
yeah,
it.
Baby.
Sonic Ranch. So Charles is also.
You ever been out there?
No, I haven't.
That's a magical place.
Yeah, he was amazing. So Charles played drums on it. He also has a space at Mosaic. So it was recorded at Mosaic Sound Collective, and recorded piano at my friend. Do you know Peggy Hanna? She does Peggy's porch parties.
I know Peggy's porch parties.
Yeah, so she has a grand piano, and so she let me record piano in her living room.
That's killer.
So we took the studio over there and recorded piano there.
Do you play those gigs?
Have I played at hers?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I did one back in May of 2019.
Would you introduce it? I'd love to play one of those. I just always feel like those people are like, no, that guy's like too rock and roll for my shit.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Definitely. She would love to have you there. I know she would.
I won't take that SG.
Huh?
I'll take one of the acoustic guitars. I'm not going to go there and assault these people with feedback all night.
Yeah.
All right. So you did it there. That's. There was something I was going to. Oh, I want to go back. Did they also do that video of that new song, the "Devil in My Heart"?
Yes, they did. And David Garcia. So Jeremy was playing bass in that video, and then David was filming it.
Okay.
And they produced it, they mixed it, and did it all together. And that is actually on the. That's in my house that we just bought.
Oh, that is.
Yeah.
Nice.
My wife and I bought an old house up in Holland, like I was telling you earlier, about an hour north of here of Austin. And long story short, we found an inexpensive, very amazing old home, historic home, that was affordable to us. Right. But that we're, you know, fixing up now. So we're living in a real small town. It's like 1,500 people. So it's pretty awesome. That's why I don't mind like living way out there and having to drive, because I'm just like, I get this giant house. It's like a dream, you know.
That's awesome, man.
So we recorded the video in that house on the second floor of our house.
Such an interesting configuration of instruments. Mm-hmm. Like the instrumentation of your band is really unique. Like, there's not a lot of bands that are drums, bass, acoustic guitar. Mm-hmm. Do you always play acoustic guitar?
Yeah, I do. I also have a Telecaster that I play sometimes. And but live for the past several years, I've been playing acoustic guitar through an electric.
Okay.
Pedals, you know.
Are you a fan of Spoon? The band?
Yeah, I mean, I know them. I mean, I haven't really...
When everyone was first getting started here in Austin, that was his trip. Like, he played through, like, an old Fender amp, his acoustic guitar thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why I like that so
much. Sounds cool.
I think it's just so much of like playing gigs. I play a lot of solo gigs, so
okay.
I'll use a loop pedal and track like an acoustic, you know, right, acoustic right, track and then play right. electric over it or play piano over it. You know, so I guess from that, I just was like, I'm just, when I get to a full band setting, I'm just like, well, I don't want to have to hassle with it, bringing an amp and bringing it, you know,
yeah,
all
yeah,
that stuff.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I would love to go back to playing electric though. I love playing electric guitar.
When you're playing acoustic shows, are you talking about like those, like a 3 hour,
yeah,
like six
yeah,
to nine
yeah, yeah,
thing
like
at a place?
Kind of, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah.
How do you like doing those?
They're fine. You know,
they pay.
It's yeah, they pay the bills, and you know,
you don't have to take a band.
Yeah, and you don't have to take a band. And that's all I'm doing. I mean, I'm only playing music, so you know, I kind of try to find a good mix between trying to find the balance between full band gigs and solo gigs.
So. So where are you playing? If you're living up there, are you coming down here and play? Like, where are you doing
I
this
do.
Stuff?
Yeah, I come down here to play. I play a lot in the Hill Country.
Like at wineries and stuff?
Yeah, that. And then different places like, you know, different. We play over at Hudson's in Dripping Springs.
Oh yeah.
Here and there. That's a nice listening room. I do like private events and house concerts and that kind of thing. So just try to find my way. And then I have places.
Do you book yourself?
Yes. Yeah. And I have friends that I stay with. And so converting a van so I can, you know, sleep in it when I don't, so I don't have to drive so far every day.
Right.
You know, kind of deal.
Hang on just one second.
Oh, sure, sure. Okay.
All right. I muted it so that the audience didn't have to deal with it, but that ends it. That thing's amazing, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So how many gigs a week do you play? Like four?
Like three or four. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How's your voice holds up good? Because mm-hmm. your voice is really good, man.
Oh, thank
and your
you.
Voice actually
you.
Sounds like a smaller person's voice. Has anyone ever said that to you?
No.
Is that weird to say?
No one's ever said that.
Because when I saw the video of you, I was like, shit, man, that guy's tall. Way taller than in my mind, I imagined yeah. a smaller dude.
I guess I've had people, whenever I meet people, they're like, well, I didn't realize how tall you were.
You know what people say to me? You know what they say.
No, no.
Jesus, I thought you were a lot taller. Because when they see you on stage forever,
yeah,
you're, yeah. yeah. And they see you at the grocery store and they're like, Jesus, dude, really? That's you?
I don't believe that.
It's a little shrimpy guy. Okay, let's go back. Let's go back to like, you were born in Lubbock?
I was born in Irving,
okay.
Dallas area.
Right.
But I grew up
in Lubbock.
Grew up in Lubbock, yeah.
Your parents, what was their situation? Were they together?
They were together. My dad, until my dad passed away a couple of years ago, 4 years ago, but they were...
Sorry about that.
Thank you. They were, I mean, they met in the 60s. They have a great story. They met in Dallas in the 60s and, you know, that was their home. And
You say the 60s, were they like 60 kids,
oh, yeah,
60s, out long
so,
hair? And
yeah,
like...
I mean, it's so cool to see pictures of them from like, you know, the 64, 65. My mom had the beehive hair,
yeah,
you
yeah,
know?
Yeah,
and they,
yeah.
And then, you know, they have this great story. They were both... When JFK was shot, they hadn't met yet, but they were both there. They were
no
both
shit.
On the
they
street.
Were at Dealey Plaza.
Right. They were on the street. They saw. So my mom's story was that
wow.
she had taken. Here's the trippy story. So she was still in high school and she was 16 and my aunt was older than her. She was like 17 and her husband had just died. He was crushed by a house because they were fixing the foundation of the house and the house fell on him and killed
Jesus.
Him. Well, they had just gotten engaged. So they were downtown Dallas taking back the engagement ring. And that's when they saw, and they had taken off school because JFK was in town.
Right.
So they saw him, they saw the
motorcade.
The motorcade yeah. drive by yeah. and they waved at him and saw him. And then minutes later, they were shocked when they found out he was shot.
Yeah.
My dad at the same time, like I said, they hadn't met yet. He was driving, he was working for some fabric company or for some carpet company or something. And he was delivering, he was having to make a delivery downtown. And I guess it didn't really dawn on him. He knew Kennedy was there. He's like, oh yeah, I guess there's all this traffic because, so he saw the motorcade drive by. But I just always remember that story. They were kind of, you know, I love hearing their stories from that time in Dallas Dallas is such a cool,
yeah.
it has its own vibe.
Yeah,
you know?
It did.
And so I love that period of history too, you know?
Yeah. There was a lot more weird underground stuff happening there than you'd think there would have been in that time. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So when was it 63?
Yeah.
That happened? Yeah.
Yeah. 60,
63.
I think it was November 63 was when he,
The Beatles came in February 64.
That's right.
And, and that was the emotional Band-Aid American.
Yeah, exactly.
That after was, that sadness.
They were the ones that brought the happiness.
Brought the smiles back.
Brought the happiness back to the American citizens.
Okay, so do you have brothers and sisters?
I do. I have adopted. I don't have any biological siblings, but they're adopted.
Oh, that's cool.
Brother and sister. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so you guys moved to Lubbock. Did your dad get a job there? Or
yeah,
something?
He was a salesman working for General Motors. They transferred him out there, and he was a salesman. So he basically moved out to Lubbock in 1979. We all did, and that was his territory, and he kind of started all the stores that were out there carrying AC Delco parts. And
cool.
You know, so he did a lot out there. He was very successful at what he did, and he was a.
He drove around to places all day.
He drove everywhere, like drove everywhere and convinced these good old boys out there that they needed AC Delco parts. And he made relationships that lasted until the end of his career.
Sure.
And, you know, he was just one of those guys that could do, he could sell you anything.
He could sell me a keyboard.
He could sell you a keyboard. Hey man, you don't have enough. I know a guy. Anyways, so that was his career. And that's how I ended up, in Lubbock at the age of four. Okay. I grew up from the kindergarten and stayed out there till with some stints living in other places, but you know, went all from kindergarten up through college in West Texas. And and I'm very thankful for that because, as you know, and as we were talking about, the music from West Texas and just the feel out there is just
the
so
art,
special.
All, just the Sounds. Art, like if for some reason it really does, if, mm-hmm. from Buddy Holly on down, mm-hmm. it's just badasses coming out of that town.
Yeah, I'm very proud. And there's still some great musicians out there. I mean, there's some wonderfully talented musicians in Lubbock still that are playing every night of the week out there.
Do you remember Stubbs there?
Yeah, okay. I used to go to Stubbs all the time when I was in college. And at the end of high school and college, the Sunday night open mic.
Really? Yeah, what they used to do?
Yeah, yeah.
I was never there on Sunday, but I did play there quite a few times, and you'd stay in the apartment that they had upstairs.
Okay, yeah.
And I have this funny story. Like 1994, my band, Mr. Rockababy, was on the road, and we had called them the night before from somewhere and said, like, hey, is it cool if we come in early so we can take a nap in your mm-hmm. place? And everyone had been partying and all this shit. So we go there early to love. I can't even remember where we were coming from, but we pulled in and we went up to the apartment. We opened it and there was all these dudes there, and they all fucking started screaming at us in Scottish accents. They were mad. And then we went down and told them, we went down and said, hey man, we called. And they said, you get in there. Like, those guys didn't leave yet. And we're like, I guess not. And they said, fuck, we told them to leave a couple hours ago.
Yeah.
So the girl goes up and tells the dudes they got to go. So they come filing down the stairs. Two of them look exactly alike, which is really creepy. And they're screaming at us, I fucking cunts. Ah, great. Fuck you. Fuck you. Like in these deep Scottish accents. It was the fucking Proclaimers, man.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
it was the Proclaimers.
Wow. What year was that?
It was whenever that record came out.
Oh, okay.
And the record had come out and it was kind of going up the charts and they were just doing that tour. So they go to this, like, whatever would be a C market or a C or B market or whatever, and go down there and play Stubbs on a night when they can do whatever. Yeah.
So that's what
it was so weird.
I remember seeing, Corey Glover from Living Color there.
Oh, that's
he came
cool.
in, yeah, he was doing his solo stuff. You know, speaking of seeing someone like
this
huge.
Yeah.
He came to Stubbs and he did a little show and it was like 94 or maybe it was 95 or something like that. And it was like, I was really, you know, it was really cool to see someone of that caliber in such a small place. And there weren't a lot of people there. I mean, there were maybe like 50 people or something like that. It was really cool. So I know it's cool to see those artists do that, that level.
Well, it wasn't cool to see those guys, but...
Yeah. I'm sure they weren't happy to see you, but...
No, they were definitely not happy to see us. So when you went there, you said you used to go to shows there. When did you first, like, start getting into music and having, like, your own taste? Like, do you remember the first record you bought with your own money?
Yeah. I mean, I remember the first, you know, the first cassette I ever got was The Romantics in Heat. I was, like, eight or something.
Is that the one after... Is that the one with Talking in Your Sleep?
It's the one with Talking in Your Sleep. Okay. That was the first cassette I ever owned. But the first record that, you know, changed my life was Thriller. You know, it was Michael Jackson. It was 1984. I was like 10 years old. And so that's kind of what, you know, seeing Michael Jackson on the Grammys was a huge, it was like seeing the Beatles on its own.
Oh, you mean on the Motown 25?
Well, I whenever whatever whichever one the, you did the moonwalk on.
Yeah, that was the Motown. That was the Motown.
Oh, was it?
Special.
Okay,
yeah.
I thought it was.
Sorry,
okay.
I'm a total nerd.
I want you to correct me. So that was huge, and then of course, you know, when 1984 came out, I mean, I'm a 80s child.
Van Halen.
So, I'm an 80s child, so you know, all the things happened during that time.
And I'm an 80s child. 1984 Van Halen.
Yeah, and that, when that came out, that was like blew my mind, and then of course, those were two big milestones, and another big one was hearing Wasted Years, Iron Maiden. Also, that really turned my mind onto electric guitar playing. So that was a time. Those three things were kind of made me want to play music. You know, made me kind of realize, you know, this is something that I want to do and I want to look into. You know, when I was very pretty young.
Did you ask for a guitar?
No. Incidentally. You know, my cousin had one, and he kind of studied for a little while, and then, you know, he kind of got tired of it, and his mom told my mom that he had a guitar that he wasn't using, and so they sold it to my mom for like $50, and then I got to it, man. Smoke on the Water.
Acoustic,
you know?
Or electric?
It was electric. It was it was an imitation Flying V.
Oh, nice.
You know, it was called a Hondo Flying V.
Oh, and, yeah.
Anyways.
I had a Hondo.
Oh, yeah?
Hondo, too, yeah. Yeah.
So I you know, proceeded to learn every single, you know, big hair 80s metal guitar solo I could get my hands on for guitar tabs. And that's kind of how I learned, was just listening and that guitar, you know. So trying to learn as much as I could.
Yeah.
You know, as a kid, and just listening to tapes, listening to, like we were talking about before, Randy Rhoads. He was a huge... You know, of course, Van Halen was a huge influence. I think he pretty much influenced everyone. And then, you know, Randy Rhoads, when I discovered him, it was like kind of another flavor of what Eddie Van Halen was doing.
To me, Randy Rhoads is like, I don't think that I could ever achieve whatever it is that he does. Because that guy, I mean, I have tremendous respect for Eddie too. Like his rhythm too is like something people don't really talk about.
Right.
But that guy is a fucking deep ass groove.
Mm-hmm. They're two different animals, you know.
But
you know, the thing I loved about Randy Rhoads, and then of course getting bitten by the classical music bug around that same time.
Right.
You know, one thing that resonated about Randy Rhoads for me was his, you know, he was a classical guitarist. That's what he loved. And he just happened to be this awesome electric guitar player too, and this kind of metal head.
Yeah.
But, you know, when he was on tour, as you probably know, with Ozzy, every town he would look up a classical guitar teacher, and he'd take a lesson.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he'd go out.
I think that's in that Sarzo book.
Yeah, he'd go out and take a lesson, and I was just like, that's just devotion, you know? He didn't drink, he didn't do anything like that. He's just devoted to creating the perfect part and being a great guitarist, you know?
I was watching a couple of videos on MTV, and they are not on MTV, on YouTube. Over the last couple of days, ever since he was going to come on. And so I was watching, there was an interview with Randy Rhoads where he won Guitar Player Magazine Guitarist
right.
of the Year. Mm-hmm. And all he says is that, I'm just trying to get better. Like, there's acceptance.
Yeah, exactly.
He's like so humble. It's like weird. Cause you're like, dude, you're Randy Rhoads,
yeah,
man.
Exactly. That's also what I love about him. I love people that are super talented that are, they just want to get better. You know, they just want to be the best that they possibly can. And, that's a point as a human being to get to, you know. It takes time to get there, you know.
I'm a huge fan of his, man. That tribute album, like, that's the thing.
That's
is
the
like
one that turned my head.
Like, you can listen to those records that they made in the studio and like whatever shit he's doing, even like something like Crazy Train in between the rhythm stuff, and he throws in these leads that are just like impossible to play. And then you listen to the live shit and he's doing it.
Yeah.
Like, he's switching he's doing it
better. And and his tone is better. I think his playing on the tribute album, which is the live recording of the studio stuff, I think it's better. Because I'll go back and listen to Diary of a Madman or like Blizzard
You're
of
right.
Oz.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, it lacks some, that playing on there is great. And the parts are great.
Yeah, yeah.
But it lacks something to me. And when I go back and listen to the tribute, I'm just like, wow, this is fantastic.
Well, the classical pieces that he plays that they put at the end of it or whatever.
Unbelievable. The one to his mom, the tribute to his
mom. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's a great. But yeah, so, you know, those guitar players. And then, of course, you know, very early on, I guess I kind of discovered that I could play the piano when I was really, really young. I had some neighbors that were taking piano lessons, and I'd go over there and learn their parts and what they were learning in piano lessons. And then their mom told my mom that I could play the piano, and then my mom put me in piano lessons, and which I got really bored with very fast. But that meant that they had bought me a little keyboard, and I kind of learned that way, just at home learning, picking up, you know, picking up songs. And so kind of just the first little phase of my life was just figuring it out, hearing something and just figuring it out on my own.
Yeah.
Realizing that I loved music from that, you know, early age. Also not at the same time growing up in Lubbock, not even realizing that Buddy Holly was from there, but like loving his music and loving Elvis and loving all the 50s stuff and just loving that. At the time, not knowing what it was, but that Carl Perkins, that you know, that Fender, that sound, that 50s guitar sound, that 50s Fender
rockabilly
sound, all that stuff. So I loved that as a kid too. So I kind of grew, you know, gained an appreciation in that way from the music, also, you know, back then, that music. And what's really funny too is that, my dad was not, you know, I don't have any musicians in my family. I don't have any, I'm the only one. My dad certainly wasn't a musician, but he was really big influence on me musically because of the music that he listened to. You know, growing up, the Big Chill soundtrack was on rotation in his car. So that was my first exposure to like Aretha Franklin or Marvin Gaye and Smokey Robinson and all these great, all the Motown stuff. You know, I eventually got into classical music, and the way that happened was, he, as a joke, gave me, and like I said, I was into metal and I was into all this other guitar playing. As a joke, he gave me a cassette. It was the Best of Bach as a joke for Christmas, you know, and he's like, here you go. And with a Sony Walkman.
The present, but that was the joke.
You gotta have something to listen to. So here's the Best of Bach. Aha. And I was like, that's funny, Dad. Thanks. So I went to my room on Christmas morning and I put that in, and I was like, it was like God had spoken to me, you know. It's like, you know what I mean? Like listening to Bach is like listening to, you're hearing the voice of God, I think. And it just, that's what started me on, I was like, man, there's a whole other thing going on that I had no idea, you know, that preceded us, these hundreds of years ago. And,
What it was that Randy was learning.
This is kind of what got me really into classical music. And then, of course, what really tied it together was, when I saw the movie Amadeus and I realized, I was like, Mozart was like a rock star. He was a rock star, you know, and I was 17 at the time. So that really resonated with me because I was like, he was a rock star. I mean, he just existed before electricity and like 250 years ago, but he was doing what we're doing. Like he's partying and like, you know, giving the middle finger to the establishment. You know, he was doing all these, he was just trying to survive and like, and then he would sit down and blow everyone's mind, you know?
Yeah.
So I really, all those things kind of, I think, kind of formulated, you know, were responsible for formulating my idea of what I wanted to do with music, you know, around 17, around that age, you know.
Yeah. And so, man, that's a lot to bite off because, like, I remember when I was, like, 17, a lot of what I was gravitating towards, like, musically, outside of like the new wave and new romantic stuff that was happening, was that rockabilly was a little bit more accessible, or like Tom Petty, like he was playing chords. You could play, and you could play it with a band. You didn't need like a synthesizer and a drum machine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if you have a band of dudes in a garage, you can't really play Sweet Dreams by the Eurythmics.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
Exactly. Or it's going to sound like what's his name? Marilyn Manson or something doing it. So when did this sort of like Western and Spanish music kind of become the direction that, like, in those bands that you were talking? Well, okay, wait a minute. Before we get to that, what made you move to Austin? Music?
No, it wasn't actually. I was in a, like I said, I was in a relationship. Well, I didn't say this, but I was in a relationship and she wanted to. We had been living in South Korea. We met in South Korea. Oh, I was an English teacher over there.
Oh, awesome.
And so she and I moved back.
What made you go to South Korea real quick?
Well, I just wanted to, I wanted to change. I had lived in Europe before. I was an exchange student in Europe, in Germany when I was in college. And I had such a great experience in the 90s doing that. You know, I learned German as a result, and I was a German minor and had a minor in German language. I was in the coal mines of Germany. So I got to travel a lot around Europe during that year.
How so cool,
I just
man.
Wanted to have like that experience because I'd never been to Asia.
Yeah.
So my girlfriend and I at the time, who introduced me to you, Violet, she was my ex girlfriend. She and I moved to South Korea together, and we moved there, and I was just like, look, I want to go to Asia because I've never been there before.
Right.
So we ended up living there for 4 years and moved back. This other girlfriend that I was with, you know, we were living in Lubbock.
Man, you're a player.
No, I'm not. That's not what I'm trying to.
No, but that's what I'm picking up, man.
Well, so we were living in Lubbock. Me and this girlfriend were living in Lubbock, and she was like, we need to get out of Lubbock because, you know, for this, that, and the other. And I was like, well, I kind of would like to live in San Antonio or Houston or maybe Dallas. And she's like, I really want to move to Austin. And I was like, I'd also lived in New York for, 3 years. So I'd kind of
Austin's
done the music.
Sleepy.
I had kind of done the move to the music town thing, the music city kind of thing. And I was kind of out of my system. That was out of my system. You know what I mean? I felt like, you know, in retrospect, I'm very happy that I moved here. But at the time, I was like, I kind of want to move somewhere where I can, you know, have affordable living and I can, you know, make a living playing gigs and not right. have to struggle. Because right. I've already done the artist struggle
thing.
New York
is like, yeah, that's impossible.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was that's a whole other story. So we ended up moving here and we had a good situation because a friend of mine was leaving his house right by campus. And so we took it over and we Airbnb'd it for a while and we were actually paying rent by renting it out that's and great. Stuff like that. So it was wonderful until, as you might remember, the city started cracking down all Airbnb and they canceled, they got Uber out. And so we had to,
So like 10 years ago.
This was 2016.
Yeah.
So it was like April 2016 is when they started cracking down on all the, you know, short-term rentals and stuff like that.
I always felt like the city wasn't making enough off of drunk drivers anymore once Uber came here. So they just got rid of them all. Yeah.
That's probably true. I hadn't thought about that. I know it was the hotel tax for the Airbnb thing.
Right.
Anyways, that was a long way of me saying that it wasn't necessarily for music other than, you know, we kind of found a great opportunity to come down here and not pay rent, basically. And but she really wanted to come, and I'm glad I did because I love this part of Texas. This is a part of Texas that I never really, I guess, previously hadn't known. It's much different from where I grew up. It's much different from West Texas, completely different. But the hill country is beautiful, like down here,
gorgeous,
all the green belts. I didn't know what a green belt was until I moved down here. Right. all the water and all the hills and, you know, it's just beautiful. And I love the history down here. Like this is where you get all the old, you know, the first settlers down here into Texas and the buildings with plaques on them. And, you know, you don't get that up in West Texas a lot. There's not a lot of that up there.
No, it seems like West Texas was like one of those places where people moved to get rich. Like it was settled there to like the oil stuff is like, and ranchers and the whole, I always think of that movie Giant when I think of any.
I haven't seen that.
You never seen that? That's really good.
Someone was telling me, I need to see that.
It's one of the James Dean movies. He only did three.
Okay.
That one has Rock Hudson and Elizabeth Taylor.
Okay.
It's fucking great.
I need to see that.
My old Hollywood. get on your AMC and watch this right now. Giant. There's also this amazing documentary it was like on Amazon Prime for a while, and it was a PBS documentary that was The Children of Giant, because there were all these kids that were extras on it, and they just kind of tell the story of like what happened to Marfa when Giant went there and started filming.
Oh.
Do you ever go there to Marfa?
I've driven through it down. I've played in Terlingua at the Starlight Theater a couple of times, but I've never, you know what, I've never been to Marfa. I've only been to Terlingua a couple of times.
Yeah.
But I want to go to Marfa. I've seen it and I know about it and I know it's really beautiful. If it's anything like Terlingua, it's definitely its own thing too, because that's feels like you're on the moon and like another planet.
Yeah.
You know, it's really cool down there.
You got a gig November 5th at the Ridgely Theater Lounge in Fort Worth. That's with your band?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Is that like that? And there's like a bar part of the Ridgely Theater.
Yeah, there's
like
there's the main theater, and then there's a couple of smaller rooms.
Okay, cool.
You know,
that's pretty awesome.
Oh yeah, I'm really happy that worked out. And so we're, you know, I don't really play in the Fort Worth, Dallas area too much. So I'm kind of, you know, and I have a lot of friends up there, and a lot of people that, you know, I know through music up there, and that like my music, thankfully. So, and family, mm-hmm. and so I'm just. that'll hopefully be a really great time for everyone to kind of come together in one spot and listen to the band instead of trying to get a gig at a, you know, somewhere that's not really a music environment.
Right.
So, but I'm very excited about that gig.
Mm-hmm. Where else do you play in town, like with the band?
We play at the Saxon Pub.
Oh, nice.
Every here and there, every once in a while. Most recently we played over at the, we played the festival, the old Settlers Music Festival in April. And then sometimes down at the Armadillo Den.
Oh yeah. That place is cool.
Down there.
It's like a biker place.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that outdoor, it's like outdoor stage area. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool place. A lot of people have been. Oh, and also at the Russet Tap.
There,
I play there on 6th Street sometimes.
I've played there.
It's a cool. It's a cool stage too.
Yeah. It was freezing cold when I played there. That's what I remember.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've done that, man. I've played there during the freezing cold. Yeah. It's. But yeah, those are pretty much the main places. And then all the band members play in all kinds of different areas and different bands.
Is that a tough thing to do? Because I know as we get older, right, and people have their families, their jobs, their lives, that like you don't really care about when you're in your late teens and early 20s. Yeah. You don't even need a bed or anything. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Just as long as you're playing in a band, you're happy. Mm-hmm. But then you get older, you have other needs and stuff.
Yeah.
It's hard to sort of like get people because they got to do stuff that like do you – is it like a – I mean, you're a solo artist, the same as me. Like right now, like when I go play a gig, it costs me a few hundred bucks just before I even go do it.
Yeah.
Just in dudes and women. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I play with women.
Oh.
I don't date them.
That's good.
Yeah, it's real good. So is it tough to sort of like, how long have you had this? Is this the band that played on the record? This is the band you've had the same three other people?
Yeah, so the bass player and violinist.
That's a tough thing to keep on board.
Well, the violinist, Megan, and Jeremy, the bass player, have been with me for a couple of years now. And then I've started using a couple of new drummers. The drummer that was playing on the video, her name's Carrie Sheehan.
Okay.
And she's from North Carolina. She's pretty new to Austin, and she plays with a bunch of... One of her main gigs is playing... She plays in a lot of country bands, so she does a lot of country... You know, a lot of shuffles and a lot of drumming in that scene.
A lot of train.
You know, if I give her enough notice, she loves playing in our band, so, you know, we love having her, so she's... I'm thankful to have her, and she's a very solid person. And then another friend of mine, he's from England, his name's Graham O'Shea, and he's a fantastic drummer as well. He has several bands that he plays in. So I have a couple of drummers, but mainly stick with the band, and I just try to give them enough notice, you know, and make sure that I'm getting enough money from a gig to make it worth their while. I have to do that. I can't, or if I'm in a situation where it's a quote unquote like cool situation for me, then not, you know, it's something that I try to make sure that I'll pay them no matter what, you know, so that's part of it. And I supplement that a lot with solo gigs and,
just work your ass off.
It's gonna work hard and figure out where which battles you want to choose,
right?
You know, which ones are you know, you're gonna kind of maybe not make money on personally, but you know,
right?
You know, so that's how that works.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's a tough racket when you're a solo artist.
Yeah
It always has been. Like ever since I became a solo artist, it did not feel as good.
Yeah.
I mean, in some ways it does.
Yeah.
Like in your band, like when you guys went and made the record, do people decide on their own parts? Like, do you come in with like a there? Do you have a pretty good idea of what you want from everyone?
Some of them, like some of the violin parts I've actually written out.
Oh, really?
And then some of them are just improvised, you know?
Right.
And then the bass, but most of the parts are their own. I give direction of like what I want, or I demo a lot of it to myself.
Yeah.
And then let them listen to the... You know,
so this song, Devil in My Heart, there's a video for it. People can check it out. I'm sure you can get to it from anthonygarciamusic.com. But
that's
it also, that song and No Sienes, what's the guitar whistling song?
It's a satie.
That's you whistling?
Yeah.
You're a fucking killer whistler, dude.
Thanks, man. So I don't know if anybody, I'm sure a lot of people know Eric Satie, but Eric Satie was a composer. He was this really eccentric composer at the turn of the century in Paris, and he wrote a lot of these very minimalistic piano pieces that are, you'll hear them in like commercials or different popular settings.
Okay.
But he did some real mysterious, a set of mysterious, dark, mysterious songs called, and that's a word that he made up, and I think it's French or something, but he had his own, he had his own like cult and religion that he believed in, his own language, and he's just a kind of eccentric dude.
That's cool.
But one of the words was like Gnosien, and that was that came from like the Gnosticism of Greek,
okay.
Greek Gnosticism.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
That was his. There's a whole history behind it. There was a whole that was his tribute to that line of thought. Anyways,
okay.
One of those. I have my dream. What I'm gonna do is put out a whistling album of like I guess like classical pieces. But that particular piece is Eric Satie, one of his Gnosiennes.
It's gorgeous. It's
number two, and it's just for guitar and whistling. And
yeah.
I'm kind of trying to make it sound like, I guess, something like a Clint Eastwood, like Fistful of Dollars.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's, like that's what I get from it.
Spaghetti Western yeah. kind of thing.
Where it's almost like, you could play a theremin instead of the whistle.
Yeah, exactly.
You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But you also whistle on the record. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what song it is.
Yeah, there's a song called Jane
yeah,
on there.
Good song.
And I whistled on there as well. I've always been kind of fascinated with doing a whistle choir for a while. Like just for, since I was in college, I was like wanting to write a piece just for people that can, like a whistle quartet or something, you know?
That would be insane.
It'd be kind of interesting sounds, you know?
Well, the single whistle, it does have that, like that, what's Ennio Morricone?
Yeah, who did exactly.
That? Yeah, yeah, yeah. It has yeah, that vibe to yeah. it. Yeah, I love that. But your music also has that vibe, which when you close your eyes, you see the expanse of the land, just mm-hmm. like Morricone. Sorry, we just got right back yeah, to the beginning yeah. of our conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Full circle. Man, you're fucking great. I'm glad that Violet hooked us up.
Well, I'm glad
she's
you,
a good publicist.
I'm glad you invited us. Or invited me
yeah.
to be on, man. I've been listening to your podcast for
really
ever since I first got to Austin.
Oh, thanks,
and
man.
I listened to it often, and that was great when she emailed me to put us in contact. I was like, no way.
this is awesome, a really man. Great. Thank you so much.
A
man.
Great, just a really great honor, and
yeah,
you know, very thankful.
Yeah,
you had me on.
Well, I'm thankful you came all the way out here. That's yeah. a long drive, dude.
Yeah. It's not that
long. when you were like, it's going to take me an hour to get there, part of me was like, oh, yeah, hey, man, just we can Zoom it. But yeah. then I was like, no, I don't.
No, it's better in person.
I had to Zoom one today that I didn't. I think he had to Zoom. Oh, yeah, because he was exposed. So that was, it didn't feel good.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of
yeah.
talking over each other and like, mm-hmm. yeah. What? that stuff.
yeah.
All right, so people can check it out. Acres of Diamonds is the record that you released. Also, they can go to your Bandcamp and get Devil in My Heart and I don't know, say?
Gnosiennes.
Yeah. Gnosiennes?
Yeah, I think that's how you say it.
Okay, neither one of us knows, so that's good.
I'm in the process of making a studio version of this song, Devil in My Heart, and I'm hoping to have it released by October.
Oh, wait.
And
that version that's on Bandcamp is the one that you recorded live from the thing?
Yeah, it's the live version on our video. So we did a live video in my house, and that's just the MP. That's the WAV file.
And it's pay what you want, right?
Yeah, it's just on there.
That's cool that you did that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what we're kind of, that's the next little thing that's happening. That'll probably be sometime in mid-October.
Yeah.
That'll be done. So we're going to make a proper recording of it, you know, release it that way.
Cool. Anthony Garcia, baby. Find him at anthonygarciamusic.com. You mm-hmm. feel good about this?
Yeah, man.
If you live in Fort Worth, you can see him Saturday, November 5th at the Ridgely Theater Lounge in Fort Worth, Texas.
Yeah.
I love Fort Worth.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's where Rosie's from. They found Rosie on the streets of Fort Worth.
Kent Bowie?
No, she was just running the streets.
Oh, okay.
And they tried to take her to a shelter, but they were like, all full, we'll kill her.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, somehow I ended up with her. Dude, thank you so much for taking all the way down here. Is there
yeah,
anything
man.
I'm missing? Anything you'd want to say? I want to thank Violet.
Yeah.
Because that was
you.
Really nice of
yeah,
her
you,
to set us up. I really, that was a pleasant surprise. Sometimes when people are like, oh, my friend, you're like, oh, God. What the fuck is this going to be?
yeah,
but
exactly.
She's like, she doesn't seem to, like, she's, the one thing about her, I will say for sure, there's no bullshit.
yeah, that's for sure. And yeah. she's also, she's an incredibly talented,
very talented
musician. You know, she studied music as well at
yeah.
Texas Tech, and she's a great she has a great alto voice, a great operatic
great
style
voice, yeah, yeah,
operatic style alto voice.
If oh, really?
Seems, I don't know,
needs
if you ever
to?
Heard her sing.
No, I never have.
Operatic style is she has a great knowledge of. She's one of those people who, you know, when we would be driving around, you know, the system of solfege, do re mi fa sol uh-huh. la ti da. So there'd be a song that would come on the radio. And she would just start singing it in solfege. La, la, ti, la, so, la, ti. How do you do that?
So funny.
It was crazy. But also a fantastic lyricist and songwriter.
Oh,
super,
yeah.
Super talented.
Yeah. Dude, that last record, it's right behind you.
Yeah.
It's on the thing.
Yeah, I was listening to this. I was listening to this the other night.
Yeah, did you see the show, the release?
I did not.
I went to it.
I did not, but I know that I knew that it was happening on the 30th.
It's funny. She wrote me, and she found out I got COVID.
Oh.
And because I mean, I did reach out to some people from that show and I was like, hey, man, I was talking like 6 inches from your face for like 5 minutes and I'm sick. That's a weird text to have to send to people.
By the way.
Yeah. Must be like venereal disease or something. Well, dude, thank you so much for coming. Anthony Garcia, dude. Anthony Garcia at music.com. It's where you get all your stuff.
Thank you.
Great talking to you.
Good job.
That was Anthony Garcia. Check out his record, Acres of Diamonds. AnthonyGarciaMusic.com. Great, great, great talking to that dude. I want to thank him for taking the time to come over. Anthony Garcia, go find him at AnthonyGarciaMusic.com. I want to thank Violet Lee from Madam Radar for setting that up. Great, 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 great conversation there. Hey, great conversation there, girl. Gang, don't forget you can follow us and like us and subscribe wherever it is you listen to podcasts, be it Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, Overcast, Stitcher, anywhere. New shows every Tuesday and every Friday. I believe next week is a two show a week, but we are dropping three shows a week here every couple of weeks because we've had a lot of podcasts and a lot of great ones too coming up. Whoa, got a lot of great ones. Don't want to give them away. Don't want to give them away. All right, gang, have a great, great, great weekend, whatever it is you're doing. And go check out AnthonyGarciaMusic.com. And thanks again, Violet Lee, for sending this up. Let's get down.
Black light and white light is dancing on the sea. And the waves just like a mirror on me, they're coming after me. Lightning flashes born and die in the starry sky above. It's just like sugar on your tongue and loyalty and love. Apparitions on the shoreline, they say my name and take my hand. They lead me to the place below the sea and the golden sand. I've ever seen hanging from the limbs of what they call the mirror tree. Branches made of diamonds and the trunk is made of coal. The leaves are made of broken glass and the stories that they told. At the bottom of the ocean in a garden made tears. It burns just like a constellation that's been dead a thousand years.
black light and white light is dancing on the sea. The waves just like a mirror army coming after me. Lightning flashes born and die in the starry sky above. Yeah, it's just like sugar on your tongue and loyalty and love. Apparitions on the shoreline, they say my